I'm Katie Legrand. I'm here with Danny Lagarakis. Wanted to talk about some of the hoops and hurdles that we experience in the industry.
A lot of the times we're selling the deals are, you know, in-house or ourselves. I mean, just because you're calling all the main buyers in your market before it hits the public market. So sometimes we get surprised with somebody being able to bring us a better offer, and we do welcome other brokers bringing us offers. But in order to kind of control the deal, the listing broker knows the most about an apartment building versus, you know, somebody else kind of coming in with their client. They don't really understand the building. They don't know the deal, which kind of would then lead to surprises probably happening during an escrow process, because I don't know who their buyer is. They don't know much about the building. So it would kind of make things a little bit more difficult. And wouldn't it honestly be helpful to the client who's selling the building, especially since they want a smooth transaction?
Yeah, I feel like we know who to call and who's going to get competitive on a deal. And the people that we call are going to be the most qualified at the end of the day versus, you know, someone who might be looking at their first building. And by all means, like, we welcome all cooperation, like Danny said, but at the end of the day, I think we know who's going to be the most qualified, the best to work with throughout the transaction, and, you know, willing to pay the most.
The larger the deal, obviously, you're kind of weeding out a lot of different buyers, you know, throughout the process. So once you start weeding out those buyers, it just becomes a lot easier, you know, grab somebody kind of locally who already owns in the area, who will, you know, understand what they're buying, and, you know, they're not coming in with a residential inspector with their tool belt for 3 hours to do an inspection on the building. And to kind of just come in, let me see a couple units, let me see the boiler room. And how different it is now to be a dual agent versus when you're in residential, if you ever got put in that position to be a dual agent.
I actually used to tell people that I don't do that. When I would work with sellers, I would say, I want to represent you. I want to have your back. I will just have them. We'll do non-agency, and they'll just, I'll only represent you. Because I felt like my sellers appreciated that, and I could still negotiate with them and advise them. It's been a totally different world and learning experience being a dual agent, but it makes perfect sense in this business.
Right.
Once you know your market, you know who to call. And while there might be every now and then someone that is working with someone else, we pretty much know who's going to buy a building before we list it.
Or at least have a pretty general idea of top five guys that are going to buy the building for sure.
Residential is all about the upfront marketing, staging, photos, making the condo or the home look its best. And so that used to be my old world, all visual, and then put it out there, right? Put it on the MLS. And then with all the upfront work you did to make that listing look perfect, you're going to get your result because you're putting it out there and it's getting the eyeballs. It's not about the eyeballs anymore. It's about specifically planning that marketing around the people who you know are going to buy the building and what's going to make them get most competitive. It's making the phone calls. So in residential, you do all the upfront work, you put it out there. In commercial, you're not putting it out there until you've done most of the work. And you're doing calls and calls and calls, hundreds of phone calls, before you even send out your coming soon or just listed email, because you want those people to feel special that you're calling them first, right? And you also want them to feel special because you know that they're going to be your most likely purchaser. So it's a very different process. And when we get a listing, I think every building is a little bit different and it has a little bit of a different plan. Like if we're listing a smaller building, we want to get a broader reach. We might do that initial email sooner just so we can like blast it out to everyone. But if we're listing an asset, a courtyard building that is vintage, that is reasonably priced, that we know everyone's going to want, we're going to hold off on that and we're going to call our top 20 people and we're going to show it to them. And then we're going to push out the further marketing. So then they think that, oh, more people are seeing this now. I better offer before it's too late.
And I love like when some of our clients say, how many tours have you guys had? We had a ton of tours. We had about 8 just today. And then, well, how many offers do you have and are they qualified? I'm like, I mean, we're Kaiser Group. Of course they're qualified. Yeah. We're not just bringing, you know, random people into these buildings. Some buyers put their business plan around a certain type of unit mix that is in the building, and you know, they want larger units versus this guy that, you know, doesn't care if it's all studios or ones. There's also guys that only like, you know, they like mixed use versus just standard apartment buildings. That's kind of what we see a lot.
Yeah, I think understanding floor plans is always important. I mean, most people don't have floor plans unless it was recently renovated or new construction. But I think at the end of the day, it's a tangible product, a piece of real estate, a building. You need to see it. to experience it and to know. I mean, even just driving by, you can't really get the same feeling. And that's why whenever we're doing analyses, we're like, can we get into the building? Because you might look at it on paper and everything seems great. There was something that we valued that we probably would have valued $2 or $3 million higher had we not seen the building and understood that there were lots of ongoing issues and some negligence. And if we hadn't gone that extra step to say, hey, we need to see it physically, it would have been, you know, $2 or $3 million higher, based on the rents and the financial operations.
And how many analysis have we had to do without actually getting into units? I mean, just to get in with that owner, we've had to put together a booklet for him. Even if he's not selling right now, we just want to get our analysis out there to the owner so that, you know, if 2 years from now, he's got a booklet from Kaiser Group that says, hey, I want to sell my building. Okay, Kaiser Group did give me a booklet a couple of years ago. But we've had to do a lot of analysis without actually like seeing the building.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Well, and units. Especially like all the mom and pops you work with too. People are be hesitant to let anyone into their building, right? I don't want anyone disturbing my tenants. I don't want them to think I'm selling. I don't want anyone to know anything. And so we can play whatever role we need to. And we'll be respectful, of course, of that. But yeah, I think it's a lot of the mom and pops that, you just got to kind of, see the process through, show them that you can, the numbers, how to value it. And then eventually, we hope that they call us when they find our book in a couple of years.
We kind of have to work backwards and figure out all the information that we can from that owner and try to put the unit mix together on a back of a napkin to then trying to figure out what, what the rents are, ask as many questions as we can to be able to put a booklet together to give it to them. So I had to sell a 200 unit portfolio, basically doing a piecemeal type of situation. I had no expenses, nothing. I had no rent roll. Majority of the portfolio was actually vacant. So I had to, kind of underwrite each building based off of pro forma and explain that to the bank while we were trying to get financing to secure the deal. So I thought that was fun.
How many times do you think you called that owner?
Probably like 1,000 times. I think I had sold something for him in 2018 off market. And it was a 26 unit building on Celia and Arthur in West Rogers Park. Probably 3 units were occupied out of 26. It needed a full rehab. Buyer ended up putting a little over $1 million into it after he purchased it. So that deal alone probably took 6 or 7 months. Didn't get paid much on it, but I just kind of saw the bigger picture and said, well, this guy's still got another couple hundred units left. And, if I can piecemeal his portfolio, put everything together, obviously his time will come at some point. Mm-hmm. He was kind of on his way out of the business.
And especially if there's so many vacancies and, it seems like it would be better off for him to and move on from it anyway. So
he ended up telling me one day, I want to sell everything. And obviously knowing the kind of owner that he was, it didn't mean too much because I knew that it was going to be like putting together a Rubik's Cube in order to figure this deal out, because I had nothing to use or to play with in order to get the deal done. So eventually, I probably went to his house probably 40 times. Every couple days a week, I would probably stop there when I was up north. So I had to call his house, phone all the time, try to get something done. And then eventually said, we're going to sign the contract. My attorney's going to come over. Following up, trying to ask him what's going on with the attorney. Eventually, the contract gets signed. It ends up in my junk mail because I had talked to the attorney 2 days after it got signed. And I said, hey, did you go to his house and sign the contract? He said, yeah, well, I sent it to you in your email. And I said, well, I don't have it. He's like, well, check your junk folder. And I see there's a contract signed.
Always check your spam. What's the craziest thing you've ever done to get a building closed?
Well, I did have a client who asked me about a week and a half before the closing that we needed to get one of the units to be vacant. It was an illegal garden unit that had one entrance and exit and no windows. So this owner was kind of a mom and pop's owner, the 10 unit building in Rogers Park, and this shouldn't have been a unit, at all. And he kind of carved it out and rehabbed it and put somebody in there. And the buyer kind of told me, hey, because of insurance purposes, this is going to be a problem for my insurance company if this tenant's here and I can't close without this tenant like gone. And I said, well, that's really difficult for me to have to go to a building and tell this tenant that he's got to get out. I ended up talking to the owner. We came up with a good plan, obviously to offer some compensation for the tenant that was in there to see if it was an option for them. It was a yes or no question for them. So we forced them out, but they were actually pretty happy. gave him a decent check. It ended up working out. We ended up closing 2-3 weeks later, and that was the end of it. I almost had another situation actually recently on a cash for keys 4-unit in Irving Park. The management company ended up signing a couple leases in the building till next March. The building needs to be rehabbed. So we have an all cash offer with no contingencies. And I find this out like last minute as we're about to execute the contract. And the owner tells me that the management had re-signed 2 leases till next March. And we kind of had to discuss a cash for keys situation to see if these 2 tenants would break their lease, you know, early, maybe within a couple months to give them some time to get out.
If you or someone you know is interested in purchasing a building with Kaiser Group, let one of us know.